continuing adventures of Nick Guy, Data Detective. Tonight's episode, Dead in the Red. Last time, a new client sashayed into Nick's office, concerned that she was being framed. Her concern heightened when Nick received a phone call alerting him to a situation that required his attention and his client's. Are the two related? We join Nick and Jennifer as they arrive at the old warehouse by the waterfront.
This is where they said to come.
Look, the doors open over there. And a light. And crime scene tape. And police cars with flashing lights.
Seems this is the place. You wait in the car. I'll check it out. I showed the officer at the door my card. He lifted the yellow tape. I ducked under it and walked through the door. The scene was ghastly. Laying on the floor was a lifeless corpse of Consolidated Dynamics. Red ink dripped from every pore. White chalk outlined the body. The auditor's scrolled signature nearby underscored the finality of this situation. The stench of Chapter 7 hung in the air. A photographer was taking pictures. Has anyone examined the body yet?
No, not yet. The crime scene investigator just arrived, waiting for the paparazzi here to finish up.
Last one. That should do it.
The investigator approached the body. He pulled on purple latex gloves and started searching his pockets. I need to get some of those gloves. Keys, a handkerchief. Nothing out of the ordinary. Then he reached into the inside jacket pocket, pulled out a piece of paper, and unfolded it. He looked at it as he stood up, then turned toward me. He had a puzzled look on his face.
Did you know the deceased?
I'm familiar. Not family or anything, but yeah, I'm familiar. I didn't want to mention Jennifer. At least, not yet.
Take a look at this.
He handed me the paper. It appears to be a sales lead sheet. But these companies that are listed, why would Consolidated Dynamics be calling any of them? It doesn't make sense.
They're crossed out check marks by every name. Poor bastard must have tried calling every one of them.
Look here, down at the bottom. What's that say? The print's too small and I don't have my glasses.
It says, report produced by Gen AI.
Two and two came together and made a suspect. I needed some answers from Jennifer. I needed them fast. Fortunately, I knew where to find her. Or at least I thought I did. As I exited the building, it was immediately apparent I would not be driving myself from the scene. Damn it. She took my car.
Who?
This girl from Consolidated Dynamics that showed up at my office tonight. She called herself Jennifer. She thought she was being framed. Just then, the headlights of an approaching car painted the adjacent wall. I didn't know there were still any K cars on the road. It stopped right where my car had been. I love that car. I was feeling lost and alone without it.
I'm too late, aren't I?
Too late for what?
Too late to save the company.
Who are you?
Grant Patch, data producer for Consolidated Dynamics. You can call me Grant. Have you seen a woman? Her name is Jennifer, but she goes by Jen. She works with me at Consolidated. You'd know her if you'd seen her.
Yeah, I'd seen her. She just took off with my car.
Then I am too late.
I'm afraid so.
I'm pretty sure I know where she's going. Hop in. I'll take you.
I was reluctant. I didn't trust this guy, and he was driving up Plymouth Reliant. But it looked like he kept it in good shape. I had no way of knowing whether his information was reliable. Nevertheless, I stepped around the car and into the passenger seat. I may have been riding shotgun, but I kept one hand close to my revolver.
Where did Jennifer go? Is Grant the one trying to frame her? Will Nick and his car be reunited? Tune in next time when we hear Nick ask,
"Where's my car, dude?" This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper.
Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
Last season, we hosted Dara O'Brien here at Rock Bottom in our episode, The Fuss About Data Ethics. Or, as he emphasized, ethics as applied to data.
As we were talking with folks at DGIQ East in Washington, D.C., the subject of data ethics came up several times.
Kind of an ironic place and time to be talking about ethics.
That's true.
In this episode, we'll hear from Katrina Ingram. She's a prolific writer and speaker on the topic of ethically aligned AI.
But first, Mark, why don't you kick us off?
In the holiday classic, It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, Linus Van Pelt famously says, "There are three things I've learned never to discuss with people: religion, politics, and the Great Pumpkin." Unfortunately, it's hard to talk about data ethics without brushing up against at least two of those. Like so many areas of information management, the explosive growth of AI has brought renewed attention to data ethics to the point that it's considered a branch of data governance. We're going to have to add another spoke to the Dimbach wheel. For this conversation, though, I'm less interested in specific ethical requirements than in their foundations, because data ethics is similar to data quality in that a reference standard is required. That reference standard is expressed in principles and policies. Now, a principle is the belief that serves as the foundation for actions and decision-making. For example, it's the responsibility of every company to minimize its carbon footprint to address the existential threat of climate change. Policy expresses the specific implementation and enforcement of a principle. Something like, Consolidated International Incorporated will use only LED light bulbs. Principle must always precede policy, otherwise the policy is baseless and arbitrary, the corporate equivalent of because I said so. Interestingly, the same policy can have wildly differing underlying principles. Sticking with the LED light bulb example, that same policy can be derived from the principle, it is the responsibility of every company to maximize value for its customers and shareholders. A contributing factor would be to use LED light bulbs that cost less to operate. The most obvious reference standard for ethics is religion, and the second is political agenda, and if you're Linus on Halloween night, then the Great Pumpkin supersedes all. Standards emerge and vanish as societal norms evolve. What's acceptable to the majority of a population changes over time. What was socially acceptable, or taboo, in the 1950s differs greatly from today. The 1850s even more so. Personal information privacy, for example, is an ethical standard that has been largely agreed upon, but suppose for a moment that your worldview places the collective above the individual, and that personal property ownership is discouraged or even prohibited. In that case, you might not have an issue with making any data about anybody, yourself included, available to everybody. And that's what I mean by understanding the ethical framework. Recognize the biases, preferences, and agendas in their creation. Most importantly, be explicit in the principles that provide the foundation for your data ethics and in the policies that implement them. And be nice to each other. I'm pleased to welcome Katrina Ingram to the show. Katrina is a prolific author and speaker and founder and CEO of Ethically Aligned AI, working to ensure that AI and ML solutions are responsible, safe, and ethical. She has a monthly column called Ask a Data Ethicist at Dataversity, where she writes about both philosophical and practical matters. Katrina, welcome to Rock Bottom.
Well, thanks so much, Mark. It's great to be here.
Great. Well, let's go ahead and start with a little bit about your background and how you became interested in ethical AI in the first place.
Absolutely. So my background is not what you would think. I actually am not a traditional data person. I come out of the world of media. So I worked in radio for a very long time at a community radio station in management. And then in 2018, I decided I was done with media. I wanted to try some new things. I had no idea what those were. So I went back to school to do a master's degree. And it's while I was there that I discovered the topic of artificial intelligence and ethics. And it was a little bit accidental. I wandered into this lecture that was being given about that topic. And it captured my imagination, not necessarily because of the technical side of things, but because of all the implications that this technology had on people. And so that's really what drove me and compelled me to start working in this space. And then it was actually through AI
that I got connected to data because it quickly became apparent to me how important data is, how important it is to manage it well, to make good choices about it. And that's really what led me into the work of data ethics. So it was quite a serendipitous and a circuitous journey into this work, but I'm really loving the work that I do now.
So when we talk about data ethics, right, that's super abstract. And it can mean one of these data words that kind of means everything to everybody or anything to anybody. So how do you bring the 50,000 foot policy down to the ground level of actual work?
Yeah, it is so abstract. I mean, if you kind of look at data ethics, what do we mean by data ethics? Well, essentially, we're talking about being responsible, doing responsible things with data, or you can flip that around and say, don't do bad things with data. But what exactly does that mean, right? And I think that that is where people are confused about, well, how does this actually show up in my organization? And so a lot of the work that I do is taking people from kind of that 50,000 foot view of the abstract, don't do bad things with data, into putting that into some kind of a policy, which is still pretty high level. So it could be something like a privacy policy is something that I think most people are familiar with, having seen them on websites and so forth. And it gives a bit of a sense of, okay, these are the things that we are or aren't going to do as it relates to data. And privacy is a really interesting area because it's the most mature area, I would say, of data ethics. And it's the one that tends to be backed up with a lot of laws and regulations and a little bit more clarity about what exactly those bad things are that we're not supposed to do. So we kind of create that policy. But then from there, and this is where I think it becomes really important in terms of putting data ethics into workflows, is what does the process look like? What are the practical choices that you're going to make each day that then uphold that particular policy? So, for example, the people who are then working with data in your organization, maybe they're collecting data, maybe they're using data, maybe they are people who are building machine learning or AI systems. It could be a range of different people. How are they then taking that policy and applying it to the work that they do? And of course, that's going to look a little bit different for every company, for different industries, and so forth. But that really is then the work of data ethics, is how do we get that into the workflow?
So how have you seen be successful incorporating data ethics and these policies into actual workflows?
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of, I'm going to give a bit of a layered answer to that as well. I think, first of all, taking it seriously as a topic. And so this idea of
Do you
tone at the
find, I'm sorry
top,
to, sorry to
yeah,
interrupt. How do you
yeah.
find that, do you find that it's difficult to get people to take it seriously as a topic?
I think that there can be commitment in a way that doesn't necessarily also provide the resources to do the work. So it's sort of like, in theory, yes, data ethics is super important. We agreed in principle that this is important, but guess what? We don't agree enough to fund it. And that's what I mean by taking it seriously. I mean, kind of putting dollars against it as something that is done in an organization. And so that to me is sort of the, a sign, I would say, of how serious you're taking something, because it's super easy just to say, oh yeah, in principle we agree with doing responsible things with data, but guess what? We're not training anyone, we're not putting money against it, nobody really knows what it is, and so all we have is an abstract notion of it. So
Right.
yeah, so that's where I'm coming from.
Right. I've long said that there's nothing scarier than a room full of executives all nodding their heads at you.
Yes.
All right. So going on. So once they take it seriously, then what happens?
Yeah, so taking it seriously, I mean, I think it's resourcing it, but also having that senior executive. And just like you've been involved in lots of different projects, I'm sure, over the course of your career, as have the people who are listening to this show. And you know that if you don't have that executive support, it's really hard to get projects done. And that's really important, regardless of the kind of project that you're working on. And it's really important for data ethics work as well, so that somebody at a senior level is somewhat setting the tone for the organization. So that's one thing. And then there is, okay, so how do we actually do this work? And I think that that involves training. And a lot of people, they might have spent a lot of time even as a data professional, but they haven't got very much training in terms of data ethics. And I think it's really interesting. I'm actually studying right now for my CDMP exam. So I'm spending time with the big book, the DIMBOK. And there's a chapter on data ethics. There's a little bit about data ethics, but it's not nearly as in depth as I feel that topic needs to be covered. And so this is sort of indicative of people who have been working in the data field. They don't necessarily have the solid training about what that looks like. And then you layer on new techniques like various data science techniques, machine learning, and so forth, and you get a whole bunch of other issues that kind of come into play in terms of how we're going to use data or not going to use data. And so all of those kinds of things sort of layer onto each other, and you need to find strategies to address all of them. And so part of, I think, what is makes people successful is finding a way to do all that that becomes a natural part of your workflow. Because if it feels like this extra stuck-on thing, it tends not to get done. So how do you weave this work into the actual workflow in ways that people can embrace? So those are some of the things I think about when I think about making it practical.
Yep. So what would you add to the DIMBOK? So we have a little chapter on data ethics, and what would the training then look like?
Yeah, there's so much. I mean, so one of the things that people get confused a lot is ethics versus compliance. So I usually start out with this idea, and it's not like they're not related. They definitely are. I've already mentioned privacy and regulation. But regulation and compliance is about following whatever the law is. And the laws, as we know, can change depending on who's making those laws and what's the flavor of the day. So there's lots of things that can happen on the legal landscape. You need to be aware of what those things are. But ethics is really about this idea of making good choices. You can actually have laws that are unethical. That makes for a really challenging environment. Yep. But a lot of ethics for organizations, it really drives from their values. What do you stand for? Who are you? And then what are the choices you're going to make that then uphold those values? And so that's really one of the big things to know about ethics. And then I think how, and then what does that mean in terms of data? I think there's been this sense that as long as we have data and we protect it from a cybersecurity standpoint, we keep it private, we've kind of done our ethical duty. And there's a lot more to it than that in terms of the choices that you're going to be to make around how you even have that data in the first place, for example, how long you're going to keep that data, what are you going to use it for? These other questions that come up.
Yep, precisely. And if anybody's listening from the DIMBOK folks, I think we have some suggestions here for next edition.
Absolutely.
Yep. So AI, you know, is moving extremely fast right now. You know, some of us have been involved in this field for a very long time, and it's gone at a glacial pace. And we've actually seen this through the history of AI, even back into the 1950s, where there have been periods of explosive growth, some major breakthroughs, and then we go into our AI winter for a decade or two. And we're definitely in one of these great expansion phases right now. So from an ethical perspective, what do you see most important for those developing and using these new models, these new generative models, associative models? What's the most important thing for them to consider as they're going about doing their work?
Yeah, I'm going to answer that question, but I'm going to set it up and I'm going to share with you how I think about these questions. And I come at these issues from a socio-technical perspective. And what that means is I don't just think about the technology by itself in abstraction. I'm always thinking about how the technology intersects with society. And so all of that involves people and power dynamics and things like funding and the political environment, geopolitics, the environment itself. All of those kinds of things are kind of intersecting with the technology, and they're shaping each other. So there's kind of this symbiotic relationship that goes on. So when I think about the technologies of today, one of the core challenges I think we have is how this technology, and I'm talking specifically about large language models and generative AI, how it was actually designed. So there's a whole bunch of ethical issues that we need to contend with before we even get into how we're using it. And those include things like the bigness of it, the vast amounts of data that we're processing. What does that mean for the environment? What about all these data centers that are being spun up everywhere and the amount of energy that's being consumed to process data for AI? So those are all ethical questions. And then we can think about the data itself. Where did it come from? And in a lot of cases, it's copyrighted data. It came from artists. It came from authors. It came from illustrators. And so there's all of these lawsuits that are happening right now because these people haven't been compensated for that data. It's just been taken. And there's this case that's being made that says, well, that's fair use to just process the data this way. But the opposite case that these authors and illustrators are making is that that is our work that has been taken and now is being used in ways that are competing with us economically. So there's those issues. And then there's how the data itself is processed or prepared for AI. And that work happens offshore. A lot of it is sent to other countries. People are very often poorly paid. They're made to look at a lot of traumatic things as they engage with it. And so that's kind of an ethical supply chain issue. So all of those things happen before we even get to how we're going to use the data in an application. And those to me are kind of the core foundational ethical issues that we need to contend with around generative AI.
So what can I do to deal with that at my own company? So all this stuff happens before it even shows up at my front door. And so here it is, and I have an assignment and I'm trying to do something. What can I do about it?
Well, I think the first thing you can do about it is, you know, and the reason I raise it is so that we can be aware of it. That's number one. And then as we're aware of this, what I'm hoping will happen is that we will see some collective will. I don't think any one individual person is going to be able to do anything about it by themselves. But collectively, when we all look at something and we all go, that's a problem, that's when things start to happen. That's when perhaps lawmakers step in or some other groups, you know, from a consumer standpoint goes, huh, I'm going to make a better version of that. I'm going to make the fair trade coffee version of generative AI, which I often talk about. And I hope people will embrace that as an opportunity. And I'm going to offer the market something else and then they can make a different choice. But I think that's how things happen. How real change happens is that enough people are concerned about a problem and they point it out to people who have power. And then those people are, you know, do something about it. And I think that's somewhat what needs to happen in this environment.
So do those people live in a AI governance council? Are they part of the regular governance council or data governance council? Are they separate? Who would sit on that and what do they do? And is that even something that's necessary at the corporate level?
Yeah. So let's say you're that, you know, developer, someone at the organization, you're that individual, you've heard that this is a problem. Who are you pointing this out to? And I think that that might vary depending on the size of the company and also how things are resourced. So if you have a AI governance council or, you know, an AI ethics committee or an AI committee of any sort, doesn't matter what it's called, that might be the group that you want to get on board. And certainly, again, going back to that, who's at the top, who's that senior executive who's attached to this whole thing, you would need to kind of get their attention as well. So that's sort of within an organization. At a society level, I think it looks like going and, you know, writing your politicians or whoever's making the laws and kind of getting their attention. So there's a few different, again, layers to it that you can do depending on how you're thinking about it in the context of an organization or just in general, in life in general.
Yep. All right. So we end all of our interviews here on the Rock Bottom Data Feed with the same two questions. So Katrina, I want to ask these of you. The first one is to think back on an influential person, somebody who's been had a major impact in your life and your career, your thought processes, somebody that you really credit with having a profound impact on you.
Yeah, there's been a number, but the one that really comes to mind for me is Dr. Timnit Gebru. And she is the AI researcher that co-led the AI ethics efforts at Google until she was fired in quite a very public way. And the reason she has been such an influence for me is that she's always stood up for and spoken out for these issues since the earliest days, even when it was hard to talk about these ethical issues. And she continues to be a front runner on issues of importance. And so she's someone that I really look up to and whose work I really admire.
Our second question is, if you could hire an intern name of Harry Potter and you could get young Mr. Potter to cast a spell for you that would work out the way you wanted to, in none of this, you know, evil genie, you make a wish and then it gets all turned on its head. No, it's going to work out just the way that you want it to. What would you have him cast for you?
I think the world has a sharing problem. I think that we have enough resources in the world, but they're unevenly distributed. And there's so much inequality in the world right now. You can look at that at different levels. You can look at it from the perspective of the global south and the global north. You can look at it from the perspective of the average working person versus management versus billionaires. But we actually have a lot of resources in our world. We don't know how to share them. So I would ask my Harry Potter spell casting intern to help us to figure out how we can share the resources that we have so that we have more quality in the world.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Katrina, for being our guest here on the show today. We'll have you back in just a couple of minutes to play our famous game show.
Okay.
And thanks to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros. When your math just isn't mathing and you need someone to fix the numbers. You know what? Never mind.
Welcome to Dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. Today's dispatch zeroes in on one event this week in the data industry. Salesforce bought Informatica for $8 billion. This is to integrate Informatica stuff like AI and data management with Salesforce big platform. And everyone goes, wow, they plugged a hole. There's a lot more to it than this. 2021, Salesforce bought Slack. 2019, Salesforce bought Tableau. 2018, Salesforce acquired MuleSoft. All right. This is a big, broad, huge integration data management platform now. All right. Also, not mentioned by the pundits because they don't pay attention to this stuff, is the fact that the master data management of Informatica, which is pretty good, will now be part of Salesforce, which was modest at best. But what does this mean to us? Industries mature. And maturation happens two ways. You either get old and you die, like the essential BI tool industries. Where's Brio, for example? Or industries mature and become wise and embedded, like database management systems, all right? Good maturation means consolidation and strengths. Bad maturation means people drop out, the money goes away, something else takes its place. Between now and next time, think about this. This does matter to you and your practice, okay? Keep an eye on acquisitions. Who's winning? Who's losing? Who's being bought? Who's being consumed? Who's being marginalized? What are the big five consulting firms doing here? What are the boutiques firms doing here? Who's hiring who and who's doing what? What's going on in the government? What type of chaos is coming out of that? It all matters. That's what I think. We'd love to hear your stories. If you're willing to share, write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
All right, welcome back. We have Katrina Ingram with us to play our famous game show. Now, Katrina, music is evocative, right? It when you hear it, it makes you think about something, generates images. It's our own personal generative AI. And so the way the game show works, our audio data Rorschach test, is that I'm going to play a piece of public domain music, public domain because we don't have a budget for this show. And what I want you to do is to tell us the first thing that pops into your head when you hear it that relates to data.
Okay.
All right. So in order to maintain the illusion of randomness, we need you to pick a number between 1 and 4.
4.
4. All right. Let me come over here, pick out number 4, and here it comes.
Well, Mark, that is definitely the sound of an AI hallucination, a data hallucination.
Definitely. So describe what it's seeing.
Oh, it's seeing colors. It's kind of going into a mode where it's seeing all these things floating around it and it's not quite sure what to do. It's almost an angry hallucination, actually.
Almost a nightmare.
Our
AI is having a nightmare.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much, Katrina, for joining us on the Rock Bottom Data Feed. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks so much. It's been fun for me as well.
And thanks again to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros, reminding you that any resemblance to actual events, persons, or businesses, living or dead, is purely coincidental.
Ethics has a reputation for being esoteric and perhaps not so practical, and I think that may have something to do with the 2 a.m. college dormitory hallway conversations where we had all the answers and didn't have to worry about the how. But ethics informs principles, which inform policies, which inform procedures. There's a straight line from ethics to the job. What's done and how it's done. It's an important topic, and clearly there's a lot to say about it. I'm sure we'll come back to it again sometime. And where did Jennifer go? And why does her coworker think he knows? Tune in next time to find out. Until then, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, more fuss about data ethics, at our website, rockbottomdatafeed.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a counter-threaded production. Copyright 2025, all rights reserved.